KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
It wasn't that long ago that Washington was considered a swing state, but no more. The last Republican governor's term ended in 1985, and for years now, the Democrats have controlled the levers of power. Is there any hope for Republicans in Washington? Or will what has been described as the great sort see to it that more moderate conservative voices just leave rather than fight it out? Tonight, that's part of the discussion with Republican Party Chairman Jim Walsh, the 19th District State Representative from Aberdeen, who's now serving in his second term as the state's top Republican. Jim Walsh tonight on Northwest Now. The Republican Party in Washington State broke. Traditional centrist, socially progressive, environmentally aware, and fiscally conservative Republicans like, say, Dan Evans, or John Spellman, or Kim Wyman, or Ralph Monroe, or Sam Reed, they all got tossed out and labeled rhinos, or Republicans in name only. Into their places marched the MAGA movement, dominated by older graduates of the Tea Party, and a newer cohort of aggrieved activists that formed Donald Trump's base. It worked nationally, but failed miserably in Washington state, to the point that the Republican Party effectively sat out the 2020 gubernatorial election and formally endorsed a deeply troubled candidate in 2024, until primary voters corrected course to put Dave Reichert forward to at least make the race somewhat competitive. Into that situation marches Jim Walsh, the state representative from the 19th District, and now serving his second term as the chair of the state's Republican Party. Jim, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. Great to have a conversation with the top dog in the Republican Party here in the state of Washington. Let me start with your overall philosophy here. Give me your elevator speech on what it is the conservatives and the Republican Party has to offer that we're not getting in Washington state.
Well, transparency and honesty. We're committed to the truth and not political cant. Washington state has always been a progressive leaning state, but it's also always been a kind of libertarian state. You know, I believe in progressive ideals, but also leave me alone. Make sure my roads are paved. Make sure the ferries are running on time. Make sure the schools are good. We've traditionally had very good public schools in Washington. And otherwise, kind of let me do my thing. And we've lost the let me do my thing part.
Well, we've lost traditional mainstream Republicans in Washington state. They've been booted by MAGA. How do you restore that? I mean, you know, we all remember John Spellman and Dan Evans. We can list off the names, and Rob McKenna and on and on. Those guys have no longer have a voice. I'm kind of surprised you do, but I think the legislature is a little more moderate than the street level MAGA base is right now in the precincts and precinct committeemen around the state. That's just my take on it. So that's a heck of a task for you to try to, even within your own party, to try to bridge this gap a little bit. Are we too MAGA for Washington state? What's your diagnosis?
Well, you know, you're selling MAGA short. The MAGA movement includes a lot of different people, some who love the president, others who really don't like the status quo that we have here in Washington and on the West Coast generally, the political status quo. I mean, the quality of life is good, but the politics are screwing it up as fast as they can. MAGA is not a monolith. It's a lot of different impulses. And frankly, the establishment, media, and political establishment here in Washington have so vilified Donald Trump that he's become Emmanuel Goldberg. I mean, he's become the 2 minutes hate. And this gets away from where most of us who care about law and civil order and good schools and good government operate. I mean, we operate in wonky policy world. We don't operate in the professional wrestling style of national political discourse. And I think what the progressive left has been effective at doing in Washington State is conflating the professional wrestling with the local focused policy.
You say that, but then we end up with a Lauren Culp and we basically miss an election cycle.
Lauren Culp was a decent man.
Because of the MAGA impulse statewide.
I think you're selling Culp short. And frankly, Culp performed about on par a little better than mainstream candidates have performed recently in Washington. So I think you're selling Culp short. He's a decent man. He had some suboptimal campaign advice during that cycle. But in terms of being someone who could have served as governor with integrity and with good intent, I think you're selling Culp short.
Little news I want to talk to you about, too, and that is the revelation of these texts amongst certain elements of the nationally, the Young Republicans. And you see a lot of the mainstream media come out with commentary about this radicalization, this kind of nihilist radicalization thread that we see in other social media and other places around the internet too, but leaking into the Young Republican group. That at all concern you seeing this? Do you think it's a one-off, or how do you view it? And what's your, being at the top of the party, what's your message to those beneath and beside you in the party?
Don't be stupid. Look, these were young people getting sort of drunk on tough guy social media rhetoric. It was dumb. They thought it was private. Nothing you say in social media is private. We could have an interesting conversation for a while about, does privacy even really exist anymore in the social media world? So a stupid thread full of stupid comments, trying to be tough guys, trying to be funny, and it wasn't funny, it misfired. I mean, there's nothing worse than telling what you think is a joke, not reading the room, and understanding that what you've said is not funny and not a joke.
So you don't have any concerns about this something ugly bubbling up amongst the youth, generally speaking, among conservatives or Republicans?
Well, why are you single out conservatives and Republicans?
Well,
I get death threats all the time on social media. I'm more concerned about the ugliness of social media. And what do you do with it? If you engage it, you become part of it. And so it's a tough call. But I think that social media is a Rorschach test for where we are in the world as a culture. What the public wheel is, mm-hmm. and it's not all pretty. Now, social media is great for a lot of things. It's a democratization of the media, and it allows everyone to have a moment.
Pick your moment.
Some of those moments don't turn out very well.
Yeah, pick your moment. So help me with this. I'm always beseeching viewers of this program to look at the results. Whatever it is, political or policy-wise or ideas, whatever it may be, to look at the results. How do you square or help me understand when people in this state look at the results, and I don't care what it is, on transportation, the homelessness issue, taxes, the Climate Commitment Act and its relative non-performance in terms of really impacting global climate and its likelihood to
which
in
is
the
what
future.
We knew all along right. about the climate commitment.
So you look at all the things and think to yourself and put yourself in this sort of results frame, the ferries, you name it. I'm looking at the results. How do we square what we're seeing with results with the consistent success, overwhelming success of the party in power? I can't square it. How do you diagnose it? Because that is your job.
Yeah, well, I mean, we touched on it already. The majority political party, the Democrat Party in this state, has conflated the theatricality of national politics with the practical, what should be the practical mindset of state and local politics. They've infected the traditions of Washington State with a bunch of stuff from Los Angeles and New York and DC and other places. Their consultants all come from other places. Their talking points are completely nationalized. You want to talk about
why can't people see through this? Why can't voters see through it? Why can't they look at the results and question that?
I think they can, and I think they're starting to. I represent a district in Olympia that for 70 years was considered a blue wall, an unbreakable Democrat stronghold. Well, if you actually tell the truth and you show people the man behind the curtain, they have a great appetite for the truth. And I think where we need to do better as conservatives and constitutionalists in this state is speaking the truth in a clear and convincing way to people. Because I think people know that things aren't working. The ferries are a good example, but they're just one example. The previous governor completely decimated the Washington ferry system. And the current governor hasn't done anything really to fix it. Now, he does press photo ops.
At least he acknowledged it's an emergency.
Okay, fine. Golf clap for that. But hasn't actually done anything to fix the problem and has outsourced the construction of our new generation of ferry boats to Florida. Come on, Mr. Governor. Enough people are moving to Florida. Let's not move our ferry business to Florida.
You mentioned a couple of races, and let's talk about some important races this year. In the 26th district, we've got a Democrat, Deborah, I can't pronounce her last name.
I believe she says Krishnadasan.
Thank you. And I can pronounce Michelle Collier's last name. And then a 5th legislative district, Miles Stomping Grounds as a kid, we got Victoria Hunt and Chad Magandans.
Magandaz, like Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Yeah, we got some tough names in there. You know, and it seems like this follows the same pattern that the Republicans can bang on them for taxes, because, I mean, look at what's going on in the state with taxes. But the Dems, just like you suggest, taking national politics, turn right around and hit them with Trump. So I guess what's the winning hand here, and how do you see those two races going?
Both of the Republican, they're technically challengers, although the seats are open,
yeah.
The current occupants are temporary appointees.
Right.
But nevertheless, the Republican candidates are considered challengers to an open seat. They both came in second in the primary, but narrowly. I mean, the mm-hmm. margins in both races, definitely within kind of striking distance
yeah.
for a general election. So they're close races. And I think that both of the conservative candidates are sharing, as you said, a policy-focused campaign approach. Taxes are the hot issue.
Yeah, and Chad's a data guy. He's always coming up with new data. And
a school teacher,
yeah.
very much a, mm-hmm. I don't think he'd mind me saying, a wonky guy.
He is.
He talks about policy
yeah.
first and most.
A lot of charts.
And they're good charts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're talking about tax reform specifically. Obviously, we've got problems with the sales tax. They call it a sales tax that was put in place recently. It's more like a business-to-business. It's more like a business tax focusing on certain kinds of services that are generally business-to-business and pushing some of those operators out of state because they can move to Montana or Idaho, provide the service, especially if it's tech-related, from almost anywhere, and not have to be domiciled here and pay this new tax. So there's that, and that affects the tech industry. One of the areas being hit hard is so-called advanced computing services, which is basically when one of the big tech players subcontracts out the development of an app or a refinement of some kind of data sheet. They'll contract that out to a smaller firm to handle it, and that so far has not been specifically taxed with a sales tax. With this new tax that the governor signed, it will be. And like I said, those smaller firms, they can do that out of Post Falls, Idaho, or Bend, Oregon, just as easily as they can do it out of Issaquah.
A lot of good policy arguments, but bad orange man.
Yeah, well, I mean, at some point, that appetite for, you know, the professional wrestling approach to politics just goes away. And when your schools are plummeting in their performance, when families that have always supported public schools in this state, in some cases families where one of the breadwinners is a teacher in the public schools in this state, are sending their kids to private schools or the small co-ops that are sprouting up because it's not even about the social issues. It's not even about the transgender stuff.
Right.
It's
just
about the bad test scores.
Yeah, which to me, you know, is an emergency. And I'm just wondering, why isn't it perceived as such?
I think it is. I mean, I think you're seeing not only a growing number of families who used to be committed to our public schools here moving their kids out of the public school system. I think you're beginning to see voters voting
That's
on my taxes are
yeah.
up. The school performance is down. Kids are graduating, but they can't read and they can't do math. You know, I try to hire a young person to come in and work at my shop, and the kid doesn't know what a 45-degree angle is.
I agree with you. Individual families have to take a hard look at that, and I think they are. I look across the electorate, though, and I'm not so sure.
Well, you know, they've been running an orange man bad, and I just think that there's not a lot of helium left in that balloon.
Let's talk about one of the big races next year. I don't want to get, you know, I guess get your crystal ball out, but the 3rd Congressional District down in Southwest Washington. Just to set the scene there, of course, we've got John Braun, the Senate Minority Leader, currently against Marie Glusenkamp Perez. And John has seemed, you know, seems to be a little more moderate, a little less MAGA. He's not maybe not going to thump that as hard as Joe Kent did last time around. So don't let me lay out the strategy. What kind of conversations are you guys having about that race? Where do you see it on the food chain of importance? Do I think it's too important? Because I feel like it's going to attract a lot of national money and a lot of national attention. And I think, last time it was the record in the state is $32 million for the race in the 8th district. My sneaking suspicion is that's going to be easily topped down in the 3rd. So set me straight. What am I thinking right? What am I not thinking right? What are you thinking?
Well, money is a factor, but money is not the only factor. These are Congress races now we're talking about. The Caldier and Magandaz races are state legislative. Yep. Now we're shifting to Congress. Congress races are big dollar races. The federal government deals in trillions, not billions. So it is not surprising that the amount of money in these races has gone up. It is a little unfortunate, but this is life. The current incumbent in Washington's 3rd congressional district is a woman named Marie Glusenkamp Perez, who is really kind of an odd duck.
Yeah. She, business owner, mechanic.
Not a mechanic. Okay. The husband was a mechanic.
Okay.
They're not really in the business anymore, although maybe to some degree, I don't know what.
Okay.
Did a good ad where it looked like she was a mechanic.
Okay. I got sucked in then.
She went to Reed College, which is sort of a trust fund hippie college over in Oregon. She's an odd duck, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way.
Yeah, yeah.
She's an unusual Congress member.
Hard to slot into, yeah.
And plays to that, tries mm-hmm. to be hard to slot.
Yeah.
Nominally a Democrat. Tries to put on that, well, I'm not like the other Democrats.
Yeah.
John Braun can cut right through that. I mean, he actually is a moderate, results-oriented mechanic of government. And he's the things that Glusenkamp Perez pretends to be. And so I think his approach is going to be, again, telling the truth, being more straightforward, and not having to do TV ads with Carhartt's so fresh out of the box that the price tags are still on them.
How do you diagnose the electorate in that district a little bit? Because my perception, I don't live down there and I don't even get media from down there, but it's a little bit Portland and a little bit Medical Lake. And neither one of those two extremes is going to work. So what's the winning strategy?
Well, I do live down there. In fact, my legislative district overlaps with that congressional district substantially. The people are true Washingtonians. They are Washingtonians of the old school. It's largely a blue-collar area, but a good, practical-minded part of the world. Not afraid of talking about harvesting timber because they know that's good business for our part of the world. Not afraid about talking about commercial fishing because that's a good business for the part of our world. And the left politically has a hard time talking about these natural resource economies. They call them extractive industries.
Or capitalism in general, maybe.
That's a bigger question, yes. But the people of the area are salt of the earth. And that is what the current incumbent congresswoman has played to. And that's what the challenger, the likely challenger, is more genuinely about. So it's going to be, I think that race will end up being about genuineness.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens.
Another big issue you've been talking about that I've been reading a little bit is voting in this state. One of the things I've always, you know, results is one of the frames I always look at, look things through for as a parent, as a journalist. Another big frame that I always looked at things through as a journalist was, you know, big claims require big proof. And there's a big claim out there about ongoing voter fraud, massive manipulation of elections. I have not seen the big compelling proof that shows that. Philosophically, do I believe in showing up and having an idea to vote? Yeah, I think I do, based on everything else. But by the same token, vote by mail, it's efficient. It's and I feel like a lot of the people
I've... If it's efficient, why is voter turnout down in our state?
Yeah. A lot of the people I've met over the years working, you know, as auditors and precinct committeemen and are good people. So I don't think they're engaged in some massive conspiracy either. And I haven't seen the proof of a problem with elections. How do you diagnose elections and what needs to happen in the state in your view? And talk a little bit about an initiative that's maybe brewing out there too.
Oh, yeah, sure. Talking signatures. Initiative IL26-126. Requiring voter ID when registering to vote in Washington. If all that you say were true, if there were no problems with our election system, one would expect that voter participation would be up, or at least steady in Washington. It's not. It's going down. That's a bad sign. What is the
issue? Could be toxic politics. That drives people out.
It could be many things. Mm-hmm. But let's focus on what's closest to the mark, which is our election processes. Let's leave vote by mail aside. There's a lot of misinformation about what the initiative would do.
Okay.
In fact, the Seattle Times erroneously reported that it would end vote by mail. That is not right, and that Seattle Times had to print a correction, even though they didn't want to, acknowledging their error. What it does is it requires proof of citizenship, voter ID. You have to prove you are a citizen, therefore legal to vote, and that you live where you say you live, at least when you register. Now, not every time you vote, but when you register to vote. This, I believe, in the sort of following the 80-20 rule, will resolve a lot of people's concerns about election integrity in Washington State. At current, we do not require any ID when a person registers to vote, and we have automatic voter registration, motor voter in this state. So we're automatically registering people to vote when they go to get a driver's license or ID from the state, or when they apply for SNAP or other benefits, automatically registering them to vote unless they affirmatively say no, and then we don't check any ID. This is not good data management.
So you're taking a process approach to it, legitimate, as opposed to I've seen fraud and there's a lot of it.
The Secretary of State has acknowledged that there are illegally registered voters in the voter database for the state. The question is not, are there any? It's the question of how many are there. They're saying, well, it's a few 10,000, maybe 30,000. Other investigative journalists working in the space suggest it's much more than that. It's in the hundreds of thousands. So the question isn't, are people illegally being registered to vote? They are. The question is, how many? I think the Secretary of State's estimate is a low-ball estimate. Let's clean it up. Let's require proof of ID, proof of your identity and your location when you register.
Our last 2 minutes here, another hot-button issue, immigration. You've been talking about it a little bit. Talk about your position of the Trump administration possibly sending the National Guard to Seattle and to Washington State, and our position in the state as being a sanctuary state. What's the problem with that?
The sanctuary state policies of Washington are illegal on the federal level. And we can try to pussyfoot around and talk about it in cloaked terms. But the fact is, the Keep Washington Working Act, which is the only part of the sanctuary state policies that are actually statutory law, is illegal from the federal perspective. Now, we can have a states' rights conversation if we want, but states' rights and the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution and the analogous supremacy clause in the Washington State Constitution really can coexist. There can be states' rights, but states have to acknowledge that on certain policy points, and immigration is one of them, the federal government has supremacy in terms of policy. So the federal immigration law has to be the lead. and the Keep Washington Working Act, which is the only law part of our bad policies, the rest are executive orders that the previous governor made, are in conflict with federal law. They're illegal.
Okay with the National Guard coming in?
Well, if there's a violent reason, if there is a threat to civil order, if there's CHAZ or CHOP, then the president is within his legal rights to federalize and mobilize the National Guard. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals just confirmed this yesterday because there was this kind of screwball opinion from a lower court in Oregon that's the president's lawful power.
Great conversation. Jim Walsh, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now.
Always great to talk about policy and politics.
All right. Both parties in Washington state have some soul searching to do. They'll have to determine just how far they'll go to appease the extremes on both sides while they risk completely alienating the vast majority of voters who feel like they've been abandoned. The bottom line, while the research and Dave Reichert's election both serve to show that the top two primary system has helped a little bit, the parties have otherwise proven they really can't stop the slide into extremism. So, additional things like the repeal of Citizens United and finding new ways to create more balanced legislative districts to make primary elections more rational, they are going to have to be part of the next set of solutions, whether the political and donor classes like it or not.